Yeah, good morning. Let's go to our first regular session this morning, Economics of Information Services. We will have three speeches, and I'm sure that they will deal with the more economic part of our business, and not economic part in the financial way, perhaps also a little bit more about the value of what we do, of the information services, information sources, the added value, perhaps. Something we will hear, I'm sure, something about outsourcing the services and about the markets, perhaps. Our first speaker today is Dr. Michael Jabb. He's the director of an institution called the Research Information Network, and this is an information organization, a British organization, which deals with the value and the importance and the discussion, what is the market importance of information or scientific journals, things like this. And I'm quite sure that we will get an overview, and the topic is the costs, whatever it means, costs of scholarly journals. And I think we will hear about something about 1.6 million journals. I don't know if we have so many journals, but we will see that. Michael Jabb, please.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for inviting me to this conference. As some of you, I think, know, it was an exciting journey to get here. London was paralysed earlier this week by 20 centimetres of snow, which we don't often get. I should also begin by saying that this is what I'm going to be talking about is some work which we completed in the summer of last year, and just last week some further work has been published in the UK using similar methodologies, but going on to talk not just about costs, but also about benefits. The picture that is presented in a new study, which was published by the Joint Information Systems Committee just 7 days ago, is not very different from the picture that I'm going to be presenting, but there are some differences of detail, but the big picture is not very different. Let me start with the big picture. What are the core functions of the scholarly communications, the research communications system? This is a description of the core functions which we developed a couple of years ago as part of an exercise that we conducted in collaboration with publishers, research funders, and librarians, as a basis for setting out what the core goals of the scholarly communication system should be. And that was a statement that was endorsed by all the key publishing and library and research funding bodies in the UK. So in one sense, there's agreement across the key groups of players as to what the functions and the strategic goals of the of public policy actually are. There's much less agreement, of course, on how those functions and goals are best fulfilled. And that's not surprising when you have a large number of groups of agents, actors, in the scholarly communication system, coming from both the public and the private sectors, from and even within the commercial sector, there are the for-profit and the not-for-profit players. So we moved on from this general idea of, well, what are the key features of the system, to looking at what it all costs, and critically, who pays those costs. Now, this is really the first time, so far as we're aware, that anyone has attempted this. I should stress that all the figures that I'm going to be presenting here are based on pretty conservative assumptions. And it's important to stress that we're looking here at both cash costs and non-cash costs. Non-cash costs in terms mainly of the time that researchers and others, but overwhelmingly researchers themselves, spend on various critical activities in the system as a whole. So, the big picture, the overall costs of the system as a whole, and I must apologise that the figures I'm going to be presenting are all expressed in pounds sterling. And as of last summer, we were working on exchange rates that now no longer apply. Like most of the rest of the world, we didn't envisage the kinds of things that have happened since September. But actually, this doesn't affect the overall picture. In pounds sterling, the costs of the system as a whole, from doing research through the publishing, dissemination of research findings, through making them accessible in libraries and so on, through to researchers and others actually reading the results, costs about £175 billion. And I must stress that the research costs that we're looking at here cover that part of the overall investment in research and development across the world, as recorded by the OECD, that is conducted by active researchers and authors who are part of what in the UK we call the research base, that is researchers mainly in universities and publicly funded research institutions. So what we're trying to capture here is only that part of investment in research that results in papers in journals. If we narrow the focus down from the system as a whole onto the bit of that system that is concerned with publishing and distribution, we find that about 6.4 billion pounds is spent on publishing and distribution. And I'm going to look in the next few slides at the key components of that cost. The biggest single element in the costs of publishing is peer review. That is the time that researchers spend actually in reading papers for journals as part of the key quality control, quality assurance system. It's a non-cash cost, of course. And it's the biggest single element of cost in the whole publishing and distribution system. And I should emphasise here also that if you look in at the overall research and scholarly communication system, we're looking here at only part of the peer review cost, because, of course, a lot of the peer review cost goes in the peer reviewing of applications that researchers make to research funding organisations in order to get the money to do their research in the first place. And in the UK, that is estimated most recently to cost about £200 million a year. And you probably need to multiply that by at least 20 to get to a global cost. But nearly £2 billion a year is spent on peer review. The direct fixed cost of getting to a submitted article to publication stage, all the business that publishers do in article selection, management and processing of peer review, editing, proofreading, and so on, costs about £1.8 billion, less than the cost of peer review. So the overall so-called first copy cost is around £3.7 billion across the globe. Distribution then covers a wide range of activities, including the variable costs of sales, administration, and so on, indirect costs in relation to marketing, into online hosting, and so on. And, of course, the need for publishers, whether they're in the profit or the non-profit sector, to generate a surplus either in terms of profit or for investment in their business. And that may be, for learned societies, generation of a surplus to fund other kinds of activities in addition to publishing. Okay, let's then move on to access and usage. And I'm here going back to the broader picture, looking at the overall cost, the $175 billion in the system as a whole. And I think that the key points I'd want to make here are that the provision of access to the journal literature by libraries, the costs that they face in doing that, the costs to users in the time that they spend in browsing, searching, downloading, printing, and so on, and the cost of the time that they spend in reading together amount to over £50 billion. That is nearly 10 times as much as the overall cost of publication and distribution. So it's a very much bigger part of the piece than publishing and distribution. And I'm going to look at each of those in turn. So first of all, access. These are the costs that libraries face in their space, in the time that is spent in acquisitions, shelving, registration, cataloguing, and so on. And let me emphasise that these access costs do not include the costs of subscriptions, because they're actually dealt with as a cost of publication, which I'll come to in a minute. So it's just the activity costs of libraries. Searching, downloading, printing, browsing, and so on. These are costs that are met by readers, but they're real costs. They're the costs of the time that they spend in doing this. And then, of course, there's the cost of the time that they spend in reading. These figures are based on Carol Tenapier's and Don King's latest estimates of how long researchers actually spend in reading. And as they would emphasize, this is in a sense a measure of value as well as cost, isn't it? Because the fact that researchers are prepared to spend this amount of time in reading shows that they are giving a value to the outputs produced by their colleagues. Okay, so I'm going to shift. If those are the overall costs and how they are built up, I want to shift focus onto how those costs are being met. And I'm going to look at the publishing and distribution bit, the access and the search and download and reading bit each in turn. Remembering again that we have cash costs here and non-cash costs, and that the non-cash ones are very significant. This is perhaps the set of costs that publishers are most concerned with. The costs of publishing and distribution, the £6.4 billion that I mentioned earlier. Over 50% of the cost of those costs of publishing and distribution across the world are met by academic libraries in the form of subscriptions. That's that blue bit of on the bottom of this pie chart. Taken together, the subscriptions paid by university and other libraries, plus the contributions made by peer reviewers in the HE system, in the higher education system, meet well over 90% of the costs of the system. Across the system as a whole, all the other revenue streams are actually trivial. Membership and individual subscriptions, author side payments, and advertising, for example, make pretty small contributions to the costs of the overall system. Of course, there are differences between different journals. Advertising revenue for Nature and for Science is very significant. For niche journals, the revenue from advertising is pretty trivial. Similarly, academic subscriptions from individuals are much less important for The Lancet or for the New England Journal of Medicine than they are for the major discipline journals. But if we look at the overall costs of the system as a whole, from publishing and distribution through to the reading, that's to say everything other than doing the research itself, about 80% of the costs are met either by university libraries or by universities and their funders themselves. And I think that's an important point to stress at a time when university and research budgets, which have been relatively buoyant for the last decade, at least they've shown quite significant increases in funding in recent years, are coming under increasing pressure. And that seems to me fundamentally important as a reason why we are likely to see greater pressure from universities in looking for efficiencies and cost savings in the system as a whole. So what is a question that we are often asked when we present findings of this kind. We are, as has already been mentioned, essentially a research and a policy body seeking to find ways in which the scholarly communication system could be made more efficient, more effective from the point of view of researchers themselves. I don't want to defend every last figure that I've presented here. I don't think, as I've said, that they are very different from other figures that have been more recently produced. And I should stress that the model on which those figures are based is available for anyone who wants to use it to put in different figures and to produce and different assumptions on which you may modify the picture somewhat. But I don't think the overall dimensions of the picture change very much. What I would stress is that the model not only allows us to look for where efficiencies might be most readily sought, but to do at least three other things. Firstly, as I say, to focus on the key areas, such as peer review. I don't think anyone had really looked at what the costs of peer review were until we did this work. I think analysing the balance of trade, as it were, between different parts of the sector is important. And also to look at ways in which the system might change and what the impacts of change might be. And I'm going to look finally at a few examples of changes that might or might not happen. As I mentioned earlier, we've had a decade and more of very significant increases in research funding. And as many of you will be aware, there is actually a fairly linear relationship between increases in research funding and increases in the number of articles and number of journals. And we looked at what would happen if the trends of the last 10 years of annual real terms increases of around 2% in research funding and 1.5% in the annual production of articles were to be continued for the next 10 years. And the overall picture is that you get in publishing and distribution a real terms increase of 25%, £1.6 billion. Real terms increase. But what I'd want to stress is that the costs shown here for publishing and distribution are dwarfed by increases in costs met by researchers for searching, browsing, printing, downloading, reading, and so on. If researchers were to keep pace, those costs would increase by about £14 billion. And of course, someone has to meet those costs. Again, if we look just at the publishing and distribution bit of the system, the costs to be met by peer reviewers and the institutions that employ them increased by £500 million, about 25%. And the costs of academic subscriptions met by libraries increase by about £800 million, £0.8 billion, again, by about 25%. How are they going to meet these additional costs? Not clear, I think. One of the ways in which we might reduce costs is by moving to e-only publishing. At the moment, the vast majority of journals are published in both e-versions and print versions. On this slide, we're presenting the findings of what would be the effect if we moved to a position where 90% of journals were published digitally and not in print. And the cost saving is about £1 billion, largely a saving to libraries in not having to deal with print. Of course, there is a VAT issue in the EU, which militates against this kind of change. If you read the report, you'll find other kinds of scenarios presented as to possible changes. But let me end with some key messages. Firstly, it seems to me that journal publishing, journal distribution are absolutely pivotal in the scholarly communications system, how you get from the doing of research to having an impact from research. But actually, in cost terms, they're a relatively small part of the system. The bigger part of the costs are actually met by readers. And the costs are overwhelmingly met by the higher education sector. They're going to continue to increase, but there is scope for savings, and we're going to be looking for them ever harder as we move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael, for this impressive overview about the publication or journal market, let's say. Are there any remarks or questions? Yeah.
I was... perhaps should introduce myself again, Michael Seidel from Humboldt Universität Berlin. I'm also editor of Library High Tech and found your comments about the cost of peer reviewing very interesting. Since we are peer reviewed and I deal a lot with that, one of the things that I have seen over the years, and I've been editor for over 10 years now, is that institutions, that is universities, have no objection to people engaging in the peer review process because there's no cash cost to the university. And in fact, the university encourages its faculty to take on these roles because of the prestige, because it gets them access to scholarly materials a little earlier than they would normally. I think your cost figure on this is really fascinating, but is it in some way a real cost?
I think my simple answer is yes, it is a real cost because it's a cost. The time that researchers spend in doing it is time that they could use for other purposes. Of course, you're absolutely right that it's a cost that brings a benefit with it in terms of standing and prestige, in terms of early access to other people's findings, and so on. The question, of course, is what is the trade-off between the costs and the benefits, and those are decisions that are being made by researchers all the time, and I'm sure that you, as I have spoken to editors, and you must experience it yourself, that there is quite a lot of evidence that researchers are increasingly turning down requests to peer review. And as the amount of research being produced itself increases, one has to ask questions about the sustainability of the current peer review system.
Weitere? Ja.
Well, as far as I know, you have also studied the effects of the transition from the user pays to the author pays model. Can you give just a few remarks about these effects?
Yes, it's quite complicated to work out what the impact, but the possible impact of a change from toll access to author side payment. Our best estimate is that it reduces the cost globally of the publishing and distribution system by about £500 million. That's on £6.4 billion. So it's around a 10% saving. Of course, those savings are not distributed evenly across the system. The main beneficiaries are institutions in the higher education system that do not produce as much research as they consume, as it were, where there are more readers than producers. And conversely, there are costs the cost will rise for research-intensive institutions. The same applies at a national level. Those countries that are major producers of research would probably see some increase in their costs as distinct from nations that are, as it were, say, consumers, net consumers rather than net producers of research. There are then, of course, questions to ask about whether the benefits, even to the research-intensive institutions and nations, are greater than the increases in costs. The study published last week, which I mentioned, suggests that the benefits could be greater. I have to say it depends on the assumptions you make about returns on investment in research and development.
Other questions? We could have time for one question more, if you're interested. So I cannot see someone. Okay, thank you once more for your speech.